This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll discuss a sweeping proposal to overhaul the state's complex court system. Also, the state's bid to force federal action on acid rain is stalled again. A major development in Albany this week could increase pressure on the legislature to approve a bill divesting the state of stock in companies doing business in South Africa. The trustees of the State University of New York voted in favor of a divestment plan. Leslie Brokaw reports.
This week's vote followed a resolution by the board 5 months ago that called for selective divestment from companies that failed to comply with the Sullivan principles. The April resolution stipulated that the board should continue to monitor the situation in South Africa. Two reasons were cited for today's change in policy: the escalation of violence against South African blacks in the past months, and the increasingly questionable stability of South Africa's economic affairs. Senior Vice Chancellor Henry Spindler read part of the new resolution.
Whereas, since the April action of this board, conditions in South Africa have grown more grave with intensified violence and without significant reform measures having been instituted by the South African government. And whereas, in the face of this deteriorating economic and political situation, holdings in companies doing business in South Africa may be susceptible to greater risk and downward pressure on their value. Now, therefore, be it resolved that, effective immediately, there shall be no further acquisition from monies comprising the endowment funds of State University of New York of any South African-related assets.
Debate preceded the vote on the divestment resolution, with trustees still expressing opposite viewpoints.
In April, some of us perhaps still felt that if there was any possibility that by holdings in South Africa we had any chance still of influencing what was going on there, we hated to give up that possibility. And we moved to do what we could do, the most that we felt we could do, to get through the board and approval of it in April. Since then, we have had a logical progression of what we felt that at that time. And for that reason, I think, have come to support this resolution.
I've heard that it's too late for us to do anything. Until the first gun is fired, I would think it's never too late. I just think that we're turning, as Clint Dominick said yesterday, I think we're turning our back on the practical solution that might come about by further negotiations. And when you tell American businesses to just get out of South Africa, which is what we're doing, we're preventing, I think, meaningful negotiations.
Because there are other investments that we can make, even if some other company rushes in and makes money on South Africa. I don't feel that it's our responsibility to follow suit, because I think that's one of the problems that we have in the world. Also, having been personally discriminated against by the South African government, by the South African police, I feel very strongly that my country, my state university, should not be a part of the moral outrage that's occurring in South Africa.
In the end, the vote was a decisive 9-4. The decision was met by loud applause and cheers from the 60 or so students who attended the meeting, and again by the hundreds who were waiting outside in the rain. Last April, SUNY students staged an 11-hour sit-in at the SUNY business office, leading to the arrest and conviction of 26 students. 4 students served jail terms for not paying their fees. An African National Congress representative, Trevor Abrams, spoke after the vote to the students.
We came here in 1979. We came back at him in April. Some of us have been arrested. Recognize the cost that this thing has been to us as students. It took a lot to move them. It took a lot of deaths in South Africa for them to change their opinion. This is your power. This is your organization. This is your campus, right? You have used your power. and we managed to sway the trustees. So I think we can pat ourselves on the back. And now we have to start with a more active support for the struggle in South Africa. There are people dying there. There are people who can need our support.
In Albany, I'm Leslie Brokaw.
The SUNY students say they plan a major lobbying campaign in the legislature. Chances are they'll find sympathy in the Assembly, which has passed a divestment bill, but opposition in the Senate, which has up to now opposed it. On this week's Capital Connection program, Associated Press reporter Mark Humbert asked Governor Mario Cuomo if the SUNY trustees' vote might change some minds over in the Senate.
I think the controller's point that the president's reluctance to deal with apartheid created this vacuum into which New Jersey has now rushed and New York State wants to move, that vacuum was created by the federal government. And if they did something, it would reduce the pressure. It wouldn't stop us from going forward, but it would reduce the pressure somewhat. So I my answer to you, Mark, is I'd rather work on a state bill than give advice to SUNY at this point.
Well, wouldn't an action by the SUNY board, however, help you get a state bill? Wouldn't that put extra pressure on the state Senate, which has been reluctant?
I don't know what relationship there is really about SUNY's action and what Warren Anderson wants to do. I don't think Warren waits for signals from SUNY, frankly.
Although the South Africa divestment issue is unsettled, New York does have on its books a historic acid rain control bill. Passage of that law was seen as part of a push to get federal action to control emission from power plants in the Midwest, which are blamed for causing much of the acid rain damage in this state. Another part of the pressure was a lawsuit filed by New York and six other states. Recently, federal judge Norma Johnson ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to start enforcing controls within 9 months. This week, as expected, EPA appealed the order. Bill Gralty got reaction to that from Nathan Riley, a spokesman for Attorney General Robert Abrams.
By appealing this decision, EPA is continuing to pull out all the stops in its legal battle to avoid complying with the Clean Air Act and to delay any action on the acid rain problem. By refusing to act promptly in acid rain, the administration is ignoring the advice of Drew Lewis, President Reagan's special envoy on acid rain, the recommendations of a special White House panel, and the overwhelming weight of scientific evidence. It's simply another sign that Drew Lewis is yet to speak for the administration. There was much speculation a week or 2 weeks ago that the administration had revised its policy based on statements by Drew Lewis to the New England governors. At that time, he said that it was as certain that sulfur dioxide causes acid rain as it is that nicotine causes lung cancer, or words to that effect. And at that time, there was hope that there would be a new policy. But this appeal is an indication that the administration is still stonewalling.
So what's your next move as far as New York Attorney General's office?
We are still the lead attorney in this case, and we expect to argue that Judge Johnson decided correctly, that EPA is under an obligation to order reductions in emissions of sulfur dioxide. The case involves the international claim, that is, the reciprocal agreement between Canada and the United States to curb pollution which affects each other's countries. And we are arguing that there was a determination under President Carter by the EPA administrator that coal-fired power plants were harming the environment in Canada. And what we're seeking is a court order that will compel the United States to honor its obligation to reduce these emissions.
Is there any way you can estimate how much longer this is going to take?
You know, we're still a year or more from resolution of these issues, but on the other hand, the litigation record is getting stronger. Essentially, the effort here is to have a court order saying that existing law requires that EPA does something to reduce acid rain emissions. Once we can persuade the Midwestern states that there are going to be controls no matter what, then I think we have a chance of having the industry and the Midwestern states negotiate, and we can go to Congress. Everybody believes that the best solution is a new law, but what we are having to do in the face of the Reagan administration's recalcitrance is demonstrate that existing law requires that actions be taken against acid rain.
Nathan Riley. This week, the Senate Judiciary Committee began hearings on a major reform of the state's court system. Bill Gralty spoke with the chairman of that committee, Senator John Dunn.
Before we talk about some of the solutions, what about the problem? I've heard the New York court system referred to in terms of 18th, 19th century. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, basically, it is. We find the roots of the existing system traceable back to post-colonial days, and it has a lot of weaknesses, but it was interesting today at the hearing that we heard some folks tell us that it's really not doing all that bad a job, and maybe rather than throw out the entire system and start anew, perhaps what we ought to do is address some of the specific failings and see if that corrects and gets us a little closer to what the people expect from their courts.
What are the most significant of those failings, in your opinion, at this point?
Well, what appears to be the principal concern is that we have a great many judges, close to 1,000 judges in our different trial courts, but they are restricted to their own particular court of limited or restricted jurisdiction, so that if a problem occurs, such as a heavy calendar in one of the county court's criminal parts, there isn't enough flexibility among the personnel to move them quickly to address the problem in that particular court. The basic sense is that if you have a single streamlined court, you'll be able to handle the business of the court much more efficiently.
One of your proposals is to create another appellate division court, another district, I guess it's called. Can you explain the need for that?
Yes, there are four departments in New York State which trace their origins back to before the turn of the century, when the four departments were divided on an equal population basis. The departments handled the appeals from the trial courts. Since that time, with the population shifts, we now find that in the second department, which is basically Long Island, there is slightly more than 50%, or better than half, of the entire population located in that one area. As a result, with a very active court system on Long Island, we find the appellate court overjammed with close to 50% of the entire appellate business of the statewide court system. Now, what we are suggesting is that that department be broken in half so that speedy justice can be achieved at the appellate level as well as at the trial court level, which we're trying to achieve through merger.
Some of the critics say that's just one more sort of empire that could be built up by the Republican Party. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would put it this way. What we are proposing here, Bill, is the proposal advanced by the Blue Ribbon McCrate Commission, which conducted a very extensive study about 5 years ago, which was funded by the Judicature Society, which is probably the preeminent research arm of judicial problems.
And they are the ones who proposed this creation of the new department along the lines that we have incorporated in our bill. Indeed, the political profile of the counties within that new proposed department are heavily Republican, but if you're going to suggest that politics was the motivating force for drawing those lines, you'd have to clear that with McCrate and certain distinguished professors who came up with those lines originally.
How is this going to fare? Are we going to come up with a workable solution, do you think, in the near future?
I hope so. I tell you, this first hearing was really quite enlightening, not only in terms of some of the critics of the basic idea of merger coming forward, but also in the give and take between the committee members and the witnesses. We uncovered a number of relatively important features which had otherwise been neglected and which I think could contribute to making an even stronger bill than what we have now. I am very optimistic that within 2 or 3 months after we have concluded our hearings and we've had further discussions with all the interested parties, I think we'll be close to a bill which the legislature can consider in 1986.
What are some of the other big items that the Judiciary Committee is looking to be facing up against in 86?
Well, probably one of the most interesting ones will be what's referred to as cameras in the courtroom to remove what is now a almost total prohibition against the use of any electronic broadcasting, whether it's by radio or television, or the actual presence of cameras, the photographic type, in any of the courthouses. We believe that it's time to reexamine an idea which has been found acceptable in a number of other states, and if we can bring about a better understanding by the public of the court system through having television coverage and radio coverage of the more significant trials, I think it would be a beneficial thing. So what we're going to do is be looking at that very closely. Another issue will be the manner in which juries are selected, how jurors are selected from the community at large, the service which will be expected of them. And I would say probably those two items, in addition to court reform or court merger, will be at the top of our agenda in 86.
Senator Dunn, thank you very much.
Senator John Dunn. There are some things I really love, and there are some things I really hate. I love the incredible number of dedicated and talented people in politics who've been drawn to it because their orientation in life is to help others. But I hate the incredible hypocrisy which leads some politicians to find all kinds of intellectual reasons for justifying some act that is motivated by a personal hate or dislike. First, they get angry at someone and use their power to hurt them, and then they figure out some highfalutin philosophical reason to justify their actions. You know, I love it when totally unexpectedly two legislators of different parties get together on a project because it's the right, not the political thing to do. I hate to see the incredible amounts of money legislators spend promoting themselves through mailings or newsletters, which depict them in the best possible light, shaking hands with five different people in five different pictures. But I'd love to see the legislature appropriate some money to televise its sessions and committee meetings so that we can see the real thing, uncut and uncensored. I hate the way the legislature closes all its party conferences where the important decisions are made so that we don't know who did what to kill what bills. But I love to see the way in which a strong personalities like Office of General Services Commissioner John Egan or Health Commissioner David Axelrod can make a difference just because they choose to exercise strong leadership. I hate the way the legislative leaders make rules which help them to win all the time, like the one that says that if you're not in your seat, you are recorded as voting in the affirmative, because the only bills that come up are those that the leadership wants to pass. I love the excitement of hearing two really good legislators square off in debate on a bill. I just wish more people could hear what I'm hearing. I hate the fact that under the new law the legislature passed in the guise of a, quote, reform last year, it is now easier for legislators to do what they want with campaign money than before the, quote, reform was passed. I love to see the interns running all over the legislature. You know, it can't help but to make things a little cleaner. I hate the thought you can't run for office without having to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars to run for the smaller offices and millions of dollars to run for statewide office. Let there be no question, all those people giving large amounts of money expect to be paid back in some way before their candidate leaves office. I love to see legislation like the seatbelt law showing immediate results and saving hundreds of lives. I love it when Governor Cuomo uses his unparalleled rhetorical skills to defend the state from the devastation of the Reagan tax program, which would not allow New Yorkers to continue to deduct their state and local taxes from their income tax. I hate it when the governor uses those same rhetorical skills to defend the indefensible, like the law which would allow political parties in the legislature to close their meetings to the public. I love the fact that we pay our politicians what they're worth. You got to pay them if you expect to recruit talent. But I hate the way that the legislators sneak their pay raises through at the last possible moment with the least possible publicity. You know, I love the fact that we have a merit civil service system in the state where you don't have to know someone to get a job. I hate the fact that there are some civil servants who are so protected by the merit system that they can't be held responsible by the very people they're being paid to serve. I love the fact that we live in a nation and state of laws. I hate the fact that the proliferation of lawyers is up to a million in the United States and is ruining us all. I love the fact that the crime rate is down, and I suspect the president's no-nonsense approach has something to do with that. I hate the fact that this state hasn't adopted a death penalty for heinous killers who certainly don't deserve to be alive while their victims lay dead. I love to watch legislators scream at each other on the floor of the legislature and then walk off the floor arm in arm with obvious affection. I hated it when Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau found, in quotes, some new, in quotes, evidence so that he can indict Bernard Goetz after an earlier grand jury had refused to do so. I love to hear the wonderful jokes that the legislators always seem to get first. I hate the way some people, when obviously on the losing side of an argument in the legislature, always fall back on civil liberties as the ultimate defense for not preventing or correcting what is clearly wrong. I love the way Governor Cuomo keeps trying to do the right thing in bringing more qualified women and minorities into state government. And I hate how self-styled representatives of those groups keep telling him it's not enough. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for still another look at state government and politics. Bill Gralty edits and produces this program. Leslie Brokaw is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC, Box 13,000. Come on, let's hear from you. Box 13,000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.